Harry had to come up with cash and had 3 out of 8 units immediately empty. It was a crisis. However, he remembered that a crisis not only was dangerous, but it also offered opportunity. He borrowed money on his credit cards, and as soon as the old tenants moved out, he had their apartments repainted, put in new appliances and carpeting, and raised the rents. He also had the exterior of the building completely repainted, fixed the roof, and put in attractive landscaping. Then he asked $750 a month, a $250 increase. Harry had done his homework, and he had learned about investigating rental rates from owning single-family homes. He had looked around carefully and discovered that apartments of the size he had were renting between $500 and $800 a month in his area, depending on condition. He fixed up the condition and moved from the bottom of the market range to near the top. As soon as he got the empty apartments rented up, he announced to the remaining tenants that he was raising their rents $100 a month. He explained that as a new landlord, he had higher mortgage payments to make than Sheila, who owned the building free and clear, and he had made improvements. 3 more tenants moved out over the next 3 months. Harry went in, refurbished their apartments as he had done with the other units where tenants moved out, and rented those for $750 apiece. Within 6 months, Harry's monthly rental income had soared from $4,000 to $5,500. His gross annual income was $66,000, making the building worth $660,000 using a GM of 10. Of course, he had spent about $10,000 a unit fixing it up, $60,000. So his increased equity was actually only $100,000, nevertheless, a handsome sum. Harry figured that over time he would fix up the remaining rentals, increase the rent, and boost his equity even further. In addition, the increased rental rate gave him a positive cash flow, allowing him to have money left over each month after paying for the mortgage, taxes, maintenance, and repairs. 2 years later, Harry had increased rents again until he was averaging $800 a month per unit, or $6,400 total. His annual gross was $76,800, giving his building a value of roughly $768,000. However, when he went to talk with some agents, he discovered they were now using a multiplier of 11. The market had gone up as more investors wanted apartment buildings. Of course, the market can also go down. Harry's apartment building was now worth $845,000. His equity had grown to $365,000 in just 2 years. Were he to sell, he would make a very handsome profit indeed. From Harry's experience, we've seen what an investor can do with a modest purchase in an apartment building. It's important to understand, however, that we've glossed over many of the pitfalls of owning such property. For example, Harry could have had serious tenant problems. He might have had tenants who not only refused to pay the rent, but then refused to leave. He would have had to resort to an unlawful detainer action in court, eviction, to get them out, and when they eventually moved, they might have left the place a mess, requiring heavy-duty refurbishing. No, this doesn't happen all the time, and if you're a scrupulous landlord who carefully qualifies tenants, it may never happen at all. But it is a risk. Additionally, we've assumed that Harry was free to raise rents at will. This is not always the case. Many communities have some form of rent control through which they limit the size and frequency of rent increases. Further, economic conditions were fairly stable for Harry, but that's not always the case. Sometimes in economic downturns, a number of tenants may not be able to pay their rent, nor can they move out, which can leave the apartment building owner with long-term rental headaches. All of these things could happen. They are the risks assumed by an investor in apartment buildings. However, if you pay careful attention to the details of the business and you have a bit of luck, they won't happen, and your profits will be significant. Buying a strip mall for profit. Henrietta also was an investor in real estate who cut her teeth on single-family homes. After a few years in the field, she wanted to move up, and she felt that commercial real estate was the ticket for her. Henrietta looked around and quickly realized that the easiest way into the field was to purchase a strip mall. This type of property goes by many different names, but in general, it is basically a small shopping center of anywhere from 3 to 12 stores located typically on the corner of a busy intersection. We're not talking about Walmart or Macy's. Rather, these properties typically consist of small businesses such as a pizza parlor or a dry cleaning business or even a convenience grocery store. These are relatively small properties with small businesses just right for the beginning small investor. Henrietta contacted several agents and found one who specialized in small commercial real estate. He showed her several properties, one of which appealed to her. It was a strip mall that had 5 stores. It was on a corner of an intersection that was fairly busy. There was a convenience store, a small Thai restaurant, a camera shop, and 2 vacancies. The owner explained that the previous tenants had just moved out, and he didn't want to rent up the units, instead leaving it to the new owner to pick and choose whom he or she wanted for new tenants. The agent said that the owner's explanation was baloney. The previous 2 tenants had gone out of business, and the owner simply hadn't been able to find any new tenants. The apparent reason was that the strip mall was short on parking. The restaurant needed parking for fairly long periods of time, while the convenience store and the camera shop needed lots of short-term parking. That left little to no parking for any other tenants and starved them of business. In short, the landlord couldn't justify the rent on a front-foot basis because there just wasn't enough customer traffic. Henrietta asked how much the property was worth, and the agent explained that the value was related to the leases. He would have to evaluate the total value of the leases over time, the strength of the tenants, their ability to stay in business for the term of the leases, and the chances for re-renting to new tenants. In addition, the type of lease would be important. In this case, they were net leases, which meant that the tenants would pay for their own repairs, maintenance, and even the taxes. These are sometimes referred to as net-net, or even net-net-net leases, depending on how much of the costs the tenant bears. As it turned out, all the leases were for 5 years, and each had only 1 year left. The agent explained this was both good and bad. It was good in that Henrietta could now negotiate new leases, hopefully at better terms. It was bad in that the existing tenants might decide to move out, leaving her with more vacancies. It turned out that the seller was asking $700,000 for the strip mall. Henrietta's rental income for the year, before mortgage expenses, would be about $100,000, providing she could get all of the units rented. However, with the 2 vacancies, her actual income would be closer to $75,000. Henrietta asked about financing and was told there was a $300,000 existing mortgage on the building that could be wrapped. When she asked what that meant, she was told that the owner was willing to give her another $350,000 second mortgage and wrap it around the first. The agent explained that this would mean that Henrietta would pay on a $650,000 mortgage directly to the seller. The seller would then make the payments on the first and keep the balance of Henrietta's payment for himself as due on the second. The agent explained that this avoided having to obtain any new financing, which might be advantageous for Henrietta because she had no previous experience in commercial properties, which might make it difficult for her to obtain the necessary mortgage. She would, however, have to come up with $50,000 cash down. The agent said that in such transactions, small down payments were just as common as full cash deals.